Welcome to the AHRQ webinar on impact of health IT on quality assessment, innovations in measurement and reporting. At this point, I'd like to introduce today's moderator, John White, who is the director of ARC's health IT portfolio. John, the floor is all yours.
Thank you so much, Colin, and welcome everybody. We're very excited to have you join us today for this very interesting topic and this outstanding panel of presenters. The topic, as Colin mentioned, is the impact of health IT on quality assessment, innovations in measurement and reporting. The old curse goes, may you live in interesting times, and boy, do we ever live in interesting times with the passage of the Recovery Act and the Affordable Care Act. The focus on health IT and its use for many things, but in particular for the measurement of quality of healthcare, has never been stronger or higher. We are anticipating in the near future the release of the first round of meaningful use final specifications for 2011, and quality measurement will be part of that, as was mandated by Congress in the HITECH Act and the Recovery Act. And we are extraordinarily pleased that in 2007, ARC made funding opportunities available for grants for investigators to look at enabling quality measurement through health IT. And the folks that are on the phone with you today are some of the experts who put forward outstanding applications and have used those resources to be able to give us some of the answers that we need at a time when we're looking to enable quality measurement using health IT. So we're very excited that these folks are here on the phone. You really have a crackerjack panel of folks that are doing field-leading work. So we're excited that they're going to be able to share that with you today, and that we're going to be able to have some interactive back and forth after the presentations. We have three presenters with us today. I'm going to briefly introduce you to them, although they are well-known. Denny McComb, MBA, is the Chief Information Officer for Citizens Memorial Healthcare. She has been at Citizens Memorial since 1988, serving as Director of Human Resources and the Director of Finance before moving into the CIO role in June 2003. Ms. McComb served on the Certification Commission for Health Information Technology as a commissioner from 2006 to 2008, overlapping slightly with my time there as well. She also served on the Davies Awards of Excellence Organizational Selection Committee from 2006 to 2008 and again in 2010. She is a member of the editorial board for Healthcare IT News, published in partnership with the Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society, or HIMSS. Ms. McComb holds a Master of Business Administration degree from the University of Missouri-Columbia. Our second speaker is Karen Kamedic, Ph.D. She is the Vice President of Performance Improvement at the American Medical Association, where she provides strategic leadership for AMA initiatives in healthcare quality measurement and improvement. She also leads the activities of the AMA-convened Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement, which recently celebrated its 10th anniversary, through continued development and effectiveness testing of performance measures, advancement of the integration of the measures into health IT, and implementation in a variety of programs. Dr. Kamedic is a founding member of the Collaborative for Performance Measurement Integration with EHR Systems, co-sponsored by the AMA, the National Committee for Quality Assurance, and the HIMSS Electronic Health Record Association. And the final speaker on our panel is Henry Fisher, MD, who is an assistant professor at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center and a practicing internist at Denver Health Medical Center. He is director of the Diabetes Collaborative at Denver Health, which serves over 7,000 primarily indigent adult patients with diabetes. He was the PI on an ARC-funded study of the automated distribution of individualized diabetic performance report cards to patients by mail and at the point of care, and the electronic distribution of provider performance report cards on diabetes measures with patient-level data. He's currently studying the use of text messaging to help manage diabetes out-of-clinic visits in a primarily low-income population. So Denny will begin the teleconference by providing an overview of the three-year quality measurement project at Citizens Memorial Healthcare. She'll discuss the challenges involved with applying quality measurement in ambulatory care and describe how they were able to achieve their goals. Karen will describe the CardioHIT project, whereby different practice sites with different EHRs exported data to a warehouse for the calculation of national performance measures. She'll also describe current efforts to design measure specifications to enable integration of measures into EHR. And then Henry will conclude the event by presenting on the use of an integrated diabetes registry to improve the quality of care for adult diabetic patients within a safety net system. He'll describe the effects of providing both patients and providers information via report cards and the benefits and challenges of this process. So as you can see, it's really a great group of talks. And really at a key time to be able to hear about these innovations. So we'll go through those presentations, and then as Colin mentioned, we will have some questions from the audience and perhaps from the panel members for each other. So let us not wait any longer. Denny, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, John. I'm going to flip the first slide there, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're sort of passionate about quality measurement and reporting at CMA, so we like to share this story, this little part of what we've done. Going to go on. So just to lay a little bit of background, Citizens Memorial Healthcare is a rural healthcare network. We're located in southwest Missouri in the Springfield region, just a little north of that in Bolivar, Missouri. We have acute care, emergency services, a line of home care and hospice services, long-term care, residential care, and then ambulatory practices, as well as outpatient services. So this is kind of our network from which we operate. Our sort of claim to fame, I guess, would be that we have implemented one electronic medical record system that crosses that entire continuum of care. So each patient has one record in our EMR that includes their visits. For example, on this slide, this patient has had a long-term care visit. They've been in the hospital, just the test patients, but they've had emergency department visits. And if I wanted to view this patient's record across visits, across settings, trend their lab results from 2003 to the present, I could do that. And so it's a very powerful tool. Our providers all use CPOE, the closed medication loop with barcoding, and we've eliminated paper charts in all of those care settings. The hospital, home care, long-term care, and the physician practices. Patients have one medication list, one allergy list, one problem list, and one history that's common across all of the care settings. So it is a powerful tool for our providers as they're providing care. And so once we got that implemented, we wanted to start extracting quality data from our system, and that's when we proposed the study that we did with ARC. Just for a little bit of background on quality measurement, you probably know of it. Initially, CMS had the Physician Group Practice Demonstration, which was a demonstration program. They moved for a few years into the Physician Voluntary Reporting Program, which a few thousand, at least, providers participated voluntarily without any kind of incentive to do so. And then in 2007, Congress passed legislation that enabled the Physician Quality Reporting Initiative, which is where we started in 2007. And it was the last half of 2007 that the legislation enabled a bonus for reporting of quality measures. So to take the PVRP program and say, yeah, if you will participate, we'll start to pay a little bonus for doing that. That first period was the last half of 2007, and then again in 2008, 2009, and now it's been reauthorized for 2010, and I think, you know, the hope is that it will be, but there's no guarantee that it will continue to be reauthorized, I guess. It does offer a 2% bonus on Medicare fee schedule services for providers who report at least 80% of the time on three or more measures that pertain to their particular practice during whatever the reporting period is, and there's some nuances to that. But mainly it's that 80% of the time for three or more measures. Plus there's an additional 2% bonus for e-prescribing, and that measure we didn't study in this study. And so the reporting for these quality measures is done three different ways. One would be on claims using a special code, quality measure code. The other is through a registry. And back when we were doing our study, it was just a pilot with electronic health reporting. But I believe that they are now accepting electronic reporting from EHRs for some specific vendors. Initially, when we made our proposal, there were 47 measures proposed. PQRI hadn't been finalized at that time. When it was finally announced, there were 74, and that has continued to grow. There are even more than 150 for 2009. And what the challenge that we wanted to address, having gone live, having gone paperless, and having started trying to capture quality measures from our EHR, was this whole false impression that just implementing the EHR will cause quality measurement to just happen. And this sort of impression still seems to persist today, I think particularly among people who haven't tried it, that just putting in an EHR will make it easy to do quality reporting. And that's not exactly true, because documentation, even in an electronic health record, tends to occur in many different places within the record, which complicates any algorithms and confuses results. And then, I think even more importantly, the clinical documentation that's needed for the quality measures as they're currently defined is often in an unstructured format, or and almost a large percentage of it in a non-standard nomenclature. So we proposed that we thought we could do it. We hypothesized that we could establish standardization, we could facilitate documentation by the physicians, and in the back end we could extract out those quality measures if we could build it all in the front end in the right way. And then we believed going in that we could show that doing so, that part of the impression that everyone has that it's more efficient and accurate to do it from an electronic health record, we believe that to be true, but we wanted to show that that was true. So we were excited to be funded by ARC for this study. When we started, we already had implemented the EHR. It's a pretty standard EHR in the market, and we were already paperless. So this was all within one EHR. And so here's what we did. Over the 3 years, the PQRI measures changed. Okay. The PQRI measures changed. And we did update what we were doing with our quality data extraction, because we would have to do that in the real world. The quality measures do change from year to year. That's how it works. They're going to evolve, and we hope they evolve and get better and better as time goes on. So we did change. There were 62 of the measures that were available in 2009 that pertain to our specialties that we have here at CMH. We have a large number of primary care providers, but we also have endocrinology, neurology, orthopedic surgery, general surgery, urology. So we had a variety. We had primary care and specialty measures that we utilized. And as we got into it, we looked at each of the measures at three different aspects of each of the measures to try to figure out where was the best place to get them out of the EHR. And one aspect is the eligibility. Does this measure apply to this patient based on usually some demographics, sometimes a diagnosis, and did they have a visit or did they have a procedure that was coded and billed for, so there would be a bill or a claim to submit the measure on. The measure itself, did the provider do or not do something for that patient? And then if there is an exclusion, a reason for not doing that, what's the documentation of that reason? Which of the exclusion reasons was it that applied? So the eligibility information, for the most part, was the easiest part to get. A lot of it is demographic data, and came right out of the administrative side of our ambulatory electronic health record system. It was pretty straightforward. There were, however, some extra qualifying conditions that were a little more challenging, some of them because a lot of them we knew weren't going to be in a standard field, but also because they weren't standardly or usually documented by physicians, like the first use of a medication. It just wasn't common for our providers to say, this is the first time I'm prescribing this particular antibiotic or this particular medication for this patient. So for most of these sort of extra qualifying measures, we had to build a field to try to capture those, which you'll see as a theme. We had to build a lot of custom fields over the course of the study. The measures themselves, then, we broke down into types of measures so that we could try to figure out with our providers where they would normally document that, or where they would be in the patient's record, in the visit, in the encounter, when they would perform that action, or they would be thinking about that action in order to document it. So we broke them down into things that providers needed to assess, either assess with the results, assess with the results and plan, but assess. Things they just needed to be documenting, like the medication list or some communication that they had with the patient. Immunizations, medications, did they give them or did they not give them, because some of the quality measures say that you should not give this medication, and you have to say why you did if you do. A plan that they have for the patient and that they've discussed with the patient, or test. And sometimes it was only a test. There was a couple where you either did a test or they had a medication, or, and some that had a test result, which are challenging if you don't get the test result during the encounter, so that it has to somehow be added later and coded later. So we took those measures and then also looked at some other attributes to try to determine how to build it in. And one of those that played in was reporting frequency. This was also one that sort of confounded our coders, with keeping track of those measures that needed to be reported once per reporting period. So if the patient with diabetes comes in 5 times during the year, you really only have to do an A1C 1 time according to that measure. I think that's right. But how do you keep track of whether it's been done and whether it's been done in 12 months of the occurrence, the visit, the encounter, within the period? And so this was a little bit challenging. Some of those we ended up putting in a health maintenance type function where there would be a reminder and an automatic sort of tracking if things were done during a period of time. Some had to be done each occurrence of some diagnosis, some every visit, like the blood pressure. And then some were initial and or each visit that were also sort of difficult for the coders to do and for the system, actually. And then we put those into this sort of usual time in the course of the visit. So did it happen during the nursing intake, like the blood pressure was collected during the nursing intake? Did it happen during health maintenance, so verification that an A1C was done for a diabetic was done in the health maintenance? Or was it done when the physician did the review of systems, the exam, or the plan, and then tried to put that in the right place as they were moving through their visit in the electronic health record? And then there are the exclusions, and I think other people are going to talk a little bit about exclusions as well. If the exclusions apply, if for some reason, one of these valid reasons, the provider decides not to do whatever the quality measure is. So maybe the patient refused or it was contraindicated by an allergy. So there are sort of three that look like standard exclusions: medical reasons, patient reasons, and system reasons within the 62 measures that we studied. They look like they're standard. It's good that they are all sort of worded the same way so that the provider gets used to what is a medical reason, what is a patient reason, what is a system reason. But in fact, for each quality measure, a medical reason has a different code because there's only one code reported for the quality measure. And so a medical reason for not giving an antiplatelet to a patient with coronary artery disease is a different code from a medical reason for not giving an antibiotic to a patient with pneumonia. So they look the same, and they could be built the same, and they could look the same on the screen, but they had to each have a different code associated to them so that they could tell which quality measure those applied to. And then there were 12 other documented exclusion reasons. These were, the exclusions were, for the most part, the biggest area where the information wasn't already in a standard field anywhere, and these all had to be built and linked up. And so 21 of the measures we studied didn't have any exclusions at all. 29 had one reason, 3 had 2 reasons, and 9 of the measures had 3 reasons. And so that's how we built those in. And then we mapped every one of those queries to this data extraction system. It's a data extraction system that we use in the acute care side of the hospital to extract quality measures for our core measures as well. And so we extract data out of the EMR already for that purpose and queue up those for an abstractor who still has to look at those before they're submitted for the core measures program. It's the same type of system. They look through our EHR, look for these eligibility requirements, and then look for certain queries to see what code would be applied. And we use the codes even though we weren't using it to report for PQRI, so that we could use it to report for PQRI if we needed to. And then we were able to get remarks back, which was enlightening for some of our providers. This is just a sample report for one period where of all the diabetic patients and how many had an A1C over 9. And one of, you can see the ones in dark we had a little bit of difficulty with. There were 406 patients in this period that would have been eligible for the footwear evaluation, the dilated eye exam, and the foot exam, and none of those were documented. I feel certain a lot of those were done, but none of those were documented because it was early on in the study, especially, and the physicians were just not accustomed to going to looking at that query field and thinking, I need to document that somewhere for a quality measure. And then the reports drill down. So what's cut off of this report is a patient identifier, but they drill down so that you can see by patient for each of the criteria which ones they met and how they met the criteria. And so this is what we call the exception approach. In our system, if the provider did do whatever it was, if they did prescribe the antibiotic, if they did assess the oxygen saturation, they don't have to do anything else. The system will pull that data, and that will satisfy the quality reporting. If they don't do that, whatever it is in that measure, then is when the exclusion would have to be reported. So only in the exceptions. So there's only a couple of exceptions for mammography, bilateral mastectomy, or two-year mastectomy. And so those are provided for the provider, but if the provider has done a mammography, they don't have to document anything further if they ordered the mammo. The other approach, which was used by our vendor as they took this out to other other sites, was the checklist approach, which was, for this example, an unhealthy alcohol use screen on a certain type of patient. Even if they did that someplace else in the record, under the quality reporting section, they needed to say yes, and that's what dropped the code to the claim. If it wasn't, then there's the medical reason exclusion altogether. So it's sort of the checklist, even if you did it. Now, both of these are flawed in a way. Under our approach, a provider could do something and then tell us why they didn't, or they could not do something and not tell us why they didn't. And in the checklist, they could not do it but say they did. You know, so you can see there's flaws. And hopefully the future, and already we've been able to build in some of these into our system where, you know, it's sort of proactively alerting this patient has X and you haven't done this already. Part of the problem with that is a lot of information for to know what needs to be done for the patient doesn't get done until the very end of the visit. Or sometimes in our case, we have centralized coding. That code may not even be applied that's needed to determine what was necessary during the visit for 24 hours to that claim before it goes out. So we haven't gotten there yet, but we hope the future is some kind of combination. And then the other sort of aspect of the whole thing that came up was the need to balance the quality of the note with the quality measures extraction. A lot of our providers said that when they used a point-and-click note, they were worried that the next provider sees that patient wasn't really able to understand what they were thinking about what was going on with that patient because it's sort of machine-like. It sort of all looks the same in the same terminology. And even a year later when they see the same patient, if they've used a fully templated note, that they can't remember what they were thinking about what was going on with that patient. And that they have the same experience when they get completely templated notes from other providers. So as we analyzed what data we did need, initially we thought, you know, we just need to have them do all point-and-click notes. We realized that we didn't really. We provide a lot of point-and-click options for the providers all throughout their visit, the history of present illness, the review of systems. But we also, and we have the extra measures that we need for the quality to get these exclusions and these extra criteria. But we also made a special effort to make sure that all throughout the note there are places for the provider to put things in his or her own words. And they can do that using speech recognition. They can type it. They can have their canned text that's in their language. And they can even use dictation and transcription that will be blended with their point-and-click note to help enhance, from the provider's perspective, the quality of the note that was produced we were able to pull the 62 quality measures that pertain to our practices. We built them into the documentation and workflow. Our study was just to do that. We didn't go further and say, you know, how many times are they used. We could report on all 62 measures. If they failed to click enough buttons, they would fail the measure, but we could report on every one of the measures. It was significantly and almost embarrassingly more complete and accurate than the centralized manual coding. We set the coders loose, gave them the instructions, and we are not eligible for most of our clinics for PQRI. A lot of them are certified rural health clinics, and we're not paid on the Medicare fee schedule. So we wouldn't have been eligible, but we wouldn't have qualified either because their reporting compliance using the coding method was so low that keeping track of have I done it for this patient, for this diagnosis in this period, and all sorts of things kind of worked against them. And so we weren't alone. CMS published sometime in 2009 that in 2008, of the 162,000 providers who reported to PQRI at least one time, only 85,000 of those actually did submit enough reporting to meet the 80% and received a bonus. But our outcomes were pretty dramatic in that it was not only more complete, we were able to report a lot more of the time, essentially 100% of the time using the quality data extraction system, as compared to sometimes as low as 25% accuracy, but also the extraction system was so much more accurate. The coders made a mistake here and there, and there's, you know, when you're manually coding, that's to be expected. So the other thing we learned was that we had to build a lot of custom data fields to make this work. So I'm glad that we got that experience. We know how to do it now, depending on what comes out in the meaningful use requirements. We'll sort of know how to do that. We hope in the future that, you know, quality measures are built, sort of rebuilt in a new way for data extraction, that there will be less reliance on custom documentation queries. We had to build 102 custom queries for those 62 quality measures, things that weren't already in the record someplace. And then we were able to, our vendor used this concept to build sort of a toolkit that was distributed out to a whole lot of other providers. So we're excited to see how the measures are redefined and transformed now as we move into a more electronic environment across the nation, and hope that our findings will help with that. So that is mine. I'll pass over to Karen.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for participating in this webinar. I first would just like to say that I come to this, as John said, with the perspective of a group who develops the measures and the measure specifications for use in various programs such as Denny just described. So from our perspective, I wanted to share with you the model that we're using to help advance quality measure reporting from EHRs. And then I wanted to share a little bit with you about our AHRQ-funded project that we completed called CardioHit. And I do have to say it was quite visionary of ARC to have this program, because this was all pre-ARA. And so thank goodness, or we'd be further behind in trying to make this happen. Now I'll talk a little bit about what we learned regarding data entry, data validation, and exclusions or exceptions. I'll talk about that language, and Denny spoke of it as well. And then what we're doing to try to advance and build on our specifications, we call them next generation measure specifications, so that they are more useful in an EHR world. Just by way of background, the group I work with, the PCPI, we have over 170 member organizations that we bring to the table to review the evidence, to review data on gaps in care, variations in care, appropriateness of care, to develop these measures. We've got them in many different clinical areas now, and as I said, we work to specify them, is our term for creating the codes and algorithms so they can be used with different data sources such as EHRs. Again, just to put it in context, many of the measures that are in CMS programs, the PQRI program that Denny spoke of, The proposed rule for meaning for use, of course, we don't know what will be in the final rule forthcoming, but many measures named there were developed by us, by the PCPI. Some of our measures are also in medical board MOC programs, in different CME programs, and are being used by private health plans. So when we started thinking about this several years ago, we said, well, we've been on one path to develop quality measures, and across the way are some very smart people working on electronic health record systems, but we haven't been talking to each other, and we probably should. So about 5 years ago, we started meeting in earnest with the EHR vendor community and got to thinking about what should we put in place so that eventually these measures could be reported on through EHRs. And so we've been following this model, and it'll be, of course, revised and enhanced as we learn more, but we said, well, we got to start with developing the measures, of course, and we want to begin to think about leveraging the clinical data in EHRs for next generation measures. In other words, hopefully we will not be reporting on the same measures from a claims world as we might in an EHR world where we can utilize much more rich data. And then we want to develop these specifications I mentioned to enable the measures to be used in EHRs, and we call them level one and level two, and I'll talk a little bit about that. We want to share these specifications with users and the vendor community before they go live to get some feedback, and we put in place a collaboration through which we do that. And then we actually want to be a part of real-world implementation or incubator groups, we call them, to test the feasibility and validity of these measure specifications. And the two that we talk a lot about are CardioHit and a project we did with fairly qualified health centers in Chicago. And today I'll focus on CardioHit. Another thing that we are trying to do is track our progress. I mean, it seems to us that in parallel to the meaningful use criteria that come out, we should be tracking for our measures. Do we have the full complement of measures that we might want for a condition such as heart failure? Do we have the level one and two EHR specifications? Have we vetted them with the vendor community, with the physician and other user communities? Have we tested it in an incubator group? Are the fields there that can be queried, and are they using standardized coding in the EHRs to enable the collection of the data? And so we're hoping to be tracking this and eventually putting this in our website so, folks know where we think we are in keeping up with where the nation wants to go in reporting on quality measures from EHRs. So a little bit about CardioHit then, which gave us a chance with this ARC funding to look at different practice sites with different EHRs. So our goal was to say, let's go to some different practice sites with different EHRs and give them a set of national performance measures. We looked at coronary disease and heart failure and find out some things about whether this was, in fact, doable. We actually did it in two phases. I'm going to talk about phase two today. And phase one was all about feasibility, and we did much of what Denny said, where we had to go to each site and map the data elements required for the measures to their system, and there was quite a bit of customized field development, just like Denny had in her experience. But at the end of phase one, all sites were submitting data to a warehouse, a data warehouse, and receiving back feedback reports on how they're doing against these two national measurement sets. So with that in place, and they kept sending data quarterly, we went to phase two, and we said, well, let's dive in a little deeper and figure out exactly which data are not available in the EHR. Are the data fields queryable? Are they using standardized clinical coding? What is the agreement rates between automatic reporting out of the EHR versus if we go in and manually review the EHR? So is the automatic query working? And a particular interest of ours is how can we move forward toward more granularity in exception reporting, something that we think is of great interest. So, Denny mentioned HbA1c. In our experience, the poster child for data not being routinely entered into an EHR is the ejection fraction that we found. We also found significant discrepancies between NDC codes that we would list in our measure specifications for drugs and the NDC code updates that were being conducted in the practices. And so the practices would get their updates for NDC codes, but they would load them at different times, and so we often found mismatches between the codes in our measure specifications and the codes actually used in the EHR. Now, RX Norm, we believe, will solve much of this going forward, but at the time we did our work, and I think still true today, RX Norm is not widely used yet in all EHRs. So then another question we asked, as I said, is, well, where is the information? And we focused in this phase two on the exception reporting. So we wanted to know if, as Denny said, if a measure was not met, why not? And where is that information recorded? And as you can see here, just an example, it's pretty much all over right now. People were entering the information for this particular measure in the problem list and the allergy list, and of course also in free text. We also found that if it was entered in the problem list, it was likely to be in a standardized code. Whereas if it was entered in the lab field, it was least likely to be in a standardized code. So we also tracked in each of these locations whether standardized coding was used. As I said, we also wanted to validate the data. And so when we looked at the data warehouse and it was shown that an exception applied, when we went into the manual review of the EHR and we looked for that exception and we also compared it with an a priori list of acceptable exceptions, we found very high agreement, so that if it's reported, it actually is in the medical record. We also found that if the data in the warehouse indicated that the measure was actually met, and that could be, mean either the numerator was achieved or there was a valid exception, that when you go into the manual record, that's there as well. Pretty high agreement there. Where we were a little surprised is that if the data in the warehouse indicated that the practice failed the measure, so there was an apparent quality failure, we call it. When we went into the manual review of the EHR, we only confirmed that in 19% of cases, meaning in the majority of the time, the practice actually met the measure, meaning on our manual review, we either found that the numerator was done or that a valid exception was there, but that information was not being picked up by the automatic query. And there are several reasons for that. Again, the NDC coding issue is one. Time being linked to the action is another. And we have a list of these that we're now working on with practices and with the vendor community. But this was very important information for us to understand in order for everyone to have confidence in results that might be exported from an EHR. As I said, a big focus of this investigation of ours was exceptions. And I use the word exceptions for a couple reasons. We try to distinguish in our world between exclusions and exceptions, and I'm not sure if it's something of interest to many, but those of us geeks, I guess, in this world, we think of exclusions as something applies to everyone. So, for example, if a measure is for people 18 and older, then we're in essence excluding people younger than 18. In other words, it applies to everyone. And we use the word exceptions when we mean things that are unique to patients. So a patient may or may not have an allergy. Another patient may have a comorbidity, that kind of thing. But granted, those words are used interchangeably in many circles. But when we were looking at exceptions, we said to ourselves, as Denny outlined, right now there are these broad categories that we've identified, medical, patient, and system. And we did that mostly so that it could work in a claims environment. But as we get into EHRs, we'd like to be able to capture that data in a more granular way because that information we never had before when we were doing measurement in the claims world. And it's a good place to sort of focus efforts to look at variation and determine is it explained or unexplained variation. And so part of what we did in CardioHit in doing that manual review of the EHRs enabled us to identify, for example, for measures that are about drugs, the primary medical reasons are really can really be categorized into four subclasses: clinical contraindication, drug allergy, drug intolerance, or drug interaction. And so we're trying to do more testing to understand what are their most common subcategories within medical patient and system so that we can advise those who are building their systems what additional categories they might want to list. We can also talk to those groups who own and develop vocabularies to request additional coding to enable us to capture these additional categories. So that was very useful information to us as we seek to try to continually improve the measures and the measure specifications, and as I said, leverage data that are in EHRs. The next thing I want to talk about briefly is, so what are we doing now to try to improve the way in which we make these specifications available to users? How can we eliminate any ambiguity from the specifications? And it's through our collaborations and our testing projects. But in particular, we've come up with this nomenclature of level one and level two EHR specifications. And the way we think about it is we call level one specifications that anybody could read. It's in English, if you will. There's coding, of course, and there's algorithms and diagrams, but you would not need to be a sophisticated programmer to understand it. Level two specifications are designed more for software experts and programmers to be able to take the specifications and see them in a machine-readable form. This is sometimes called HQMF or an e-measure to enable more sophisticated, streamlined integration of the measure specifications into EHRs. But just to share with you briefly what these level one specifications look like, they have three components. There's a visual representation of the measure logic, a flow diagram. There's the mathematical calculation itself, and then there's the different value sets. And so you'll recall that Denny showed a template that sort of asked the questions to figure out, do you have a patient in this eligible population? Did you meet the numerator? Do you have an exception? We're just trying to take that now and create the same thing, but a little more focused on an EHR world. So the first piece, the visual representation, looks like this. Members of our team developed this, and they affectionately call these different columns swim lanes. And it's intended to be read from left to right just to give people a visual representation, a pictorial of what you look for first, the patient population, then identifying the denominator, did they meet the numerator, and if they did not meet the numerator, do they have a valid exception. So we're creating these visual representations now for all of our measure specifications. The second piece, the mathematical calculation, is really just fractions. But what we're trying to emphasize is to not just be able to calculate the performance rate, but also to calculate the exception rate and report that alongside. That's not data that should be lost, but rather data that we want to shine a light on. Also part of what we're doing now with specifications that we learned through CardioHit is to really be pretty specific about what we mean in cases, which blood pressure reading to take, et cetera. And so all of those definitions are now added in a more, I think, complete way than we did before. And then the last piece of it is the value sets that have the code list in them. And so when we say you need value set one, which would enable you to identify people with heart failure, we then provide you with the list of those codes for people with those codes representing people with heart failure. And I think this notion of value sets is something we're all going to hear more about. We would like to share these value sets with others. It does not make sense for many groups to keep creating them, but it's something that I think would be great for us as a community to share going forward. A couple other just comments on what we're doing now to try to enhance our measure specifications. We know that in EHRs we're all anticipating that there will be additional code sets used than were used in claims, than are used in claims. But we're in various stages of adoption of those clinical code sets in EHRs. So for a time period going forward, we are going to continue to include all types of code sets in our specifications. And this is just in recognition that, you know, again, it's going to take time for, the nationally accepted code sets to be used in all EHRs. But we do want to help transition to that time of using more clinically relevant code sets. In terms of our priorities of developing the level one EHR specs, obviously we're starting with ones that are used in programs now, particularly the EHR reporting feature of PQRI. Any measures that we happen to have that do find their way into the final rule, we'll look at those. We are marrying our work with the efforts of the NQF regarding quality data set. We're using the same terminology as them. But the idea is to really round out our portfolio with these types of specifications. Just to say a little bit on these level two specifications, which is a little outside of my league given it's rather technical, but it is referred to, as I said, as HQMF or e-measure. This is something that came about as our talking with EHR vendors years ago when they said, well, Karen, it's really nice that you give us these EHR specifications in Word documents and Excel files, but each one of us, each vendor, takes that and turns it into code that we can automatically feed into our system. So we said, well, we could probably do that. And so we came up with a template in XML, which we called HQMF, and we developed a prototype, and then we said to others, you know, this probably needs to become a standard. And so NQF took that work on, and it went through an SDO and actually was recently successfully validated, and it's now an HL7 draft standard for trial use as of the fall. And so we will also now be working to take these EHR specifications that we have in level one and turn them into this machine-readable form called level two or e-measure. Hope that makes sense to folks. We'll find out in the Q&A. So I think that we've actually come a long way in the past few years. I feel like at least we are on the same path. There's a lot of pointy things on either side of the path, but I think we're speaking the same language and we're all working toward the same goal. These are just a few references, and in particular the one I starred by Chan, Fowles, and Weiner. If you haven't seen that, it just came out this week. It's nice to see that we actually are building a literature base on this such that we can have a review article on literature out there. So if you haven't seen that, you might want to take a look at that. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Karen. This is Henry Fisher, and thanks everyone for joining us. I'm here with Josh Durfee today. Josh helped us with the quantitative analysis for our intervention, as well as some of the technical sides of the implementation. So if questions arise in those areas, he can help us answer those questions. And as John White said in the introduction, we work at Denver Health Medical Center. It's a safety net hospital here in Denver. We serve a bit over 7,000 adult diabetic patients through 8 community health centers. And in this intervention, it was a one-year intervention. We used our diabetes registry in 2 ways. One, we used it to feedback data to patients on their performance, on the A1C, their blood sugar control, their blood pressure control, and their lipid control, and wanted to see the impact on their ability to work on self-management of their disease and diabetes outcomes. The second aspect of our intervention was feeding back data to providers. And in the intervention, we fed back to all of our providers on a quarterly basis throughout the year performance data on their diabetic panel compared to the average at their clinic as well as to other providers. And then in the intervention component of it, we took half of our providers and additionally drilled down to provide patient-level information on patients that were we felt could be targeted for better performance. Just a couple words on background. As far as self-management, there are a lot of studies out there on diabetes self-management. They tend to focus on the hemoglobin A1C. They tend to be effective, but one thing is they're often time-intensive, often in a group format, sometimes taking 12 hours or more of education and support to an individual patient. As far as provider performance feedback, that's also pretty well studied, and it tends not to be so effective. We find that with provider performance feedback, we often can impact process outcomes like checking blood pressure, checking A1C more often, getting patients to come in to visits, but we have less of an impact on intermediate outcomes, actually improving blood pressure, improving glycemic control. However, now with our advances in health information technology, we have the ability to provide automated, targeted information to providers on their diabetic panels. So our objectives in this intervention were twofold. One was to focus on patients and using a tool we called the patient report card. We had two questions. One, if we mailed these to our patients on a quarterly basis throughout the year, could we impact process outcomes? In other words, could we get patients to come in more for lab checks, to come in more for visits? This was randomized at the patient level throughout our healthcare system such that half of the patients received the mailings and half did not receive the mailings. The other question as far as the patient report card was if we distributed this at the point of care, could we impact intermediate outcomes, have a little bit more of a robust impact and affect glycemic blood pressure and lipid control. So this randomization took place at the clinic level. So of our 8 clinics, 4 clinics were randomized to the point of care distribution of the patient report card such that at every primary care visit, the diabetic patient had this report card printed out at the time of registration. It was handed to the patient as they waited for the provider, and it served as a tool for communication between the patient and the provider. The second aspect of the intervention had to do with the provider performance feedback. And here again, we randomized at the clinic level such that 4 of our clinics had just a standard provider performance feedback, and the other 4 clinics had the standard plus what we call the enhanced provider performance feedback. So the standard feedback gave information to all of our providers about how they're doing on their diabetic panels compared to their other providers at their clinics. The enhanced provider report card gave them additional information. Every quarter, we picked a pre-selected criteria based on A1C, blood pressure, or lipid performance, and gave an individual provider up to 10 patients who were falling short on that particular measure. This is a pretty busy slide, but I just wanted to show it so you got an idea of what our provider performance feedback looked like. This was generated electronically. All of our providers received this sort of report. It was kind of a standard report given to all providers. And so this is at one of our clinics, and it's looking at performance on A1C. And if you look at the pie chart in the upper left corner, there are different zones, the A1C, and for each zone, the percentage of patients that fell into each zone, such as A1C less than 7, between 7 and 9, between 9 and 11, greater than 11, or no A1C. And then next to that, you see the performance of the A1C zones over time at the clinic, trends over time. Below that, you see the individual providers and how they performed on the different A1C zones and compared to other providers at the same clinic. And then below that is a table form of the data breaking down for individual provider performance. So the intervention group received these report cards as well as drilling down, as mentioned before, on the pre-selected criteria for each provider delivered electronically a list of up to 10 patients that were falling short on that particular measure. This next slide, again busy, but just to give you a sense of what our patient report card looked like. So at the top of the patient report card, we had a description of the ABCs. A is for A1C, or blood sugar control, B is for blood pressure, C is for cholesterol. And then in the table below that, for the individual patient, it would give the target for each of those measures. It would give the patient's performance on their last check on those measures and give it a grade anywhere between excellent, good, fair to poor. And then they would get their result of their previous measure as well as a grade and when the next test was due. And then a bit more information upon that, the Framingham risk score, the risk of a cardiovascular event in the next 10 years, and then some information on how they were doing on some education modules that we recommend in our healthcare system. And then below that, encouraging the patient to pick a self-management goal and work with their provider on it, whether it has to do with taking their medications, diet, exercise, attending appointments, or another type of self-management goal. So our study population came from our diabetes registry, which consists of patients over age 18 that have had an ICD-9 code for diabetes in the last 18 months, as well as a visit, a primary care visit in the last 18 months. We excluded patients that were over 75, as we don't have a lot of data as to what we should shoot for in our quality measures in these patients, and not a lot of consensus amongst the experts. We also excluded patients without a working address, as there was a mailing component to this intervention. And then finally, we only included patients that spoke either English or Spanish. This made up about 95% of our patient population, and just as a matter of resources, we cannot expand to other languages for this intervention. This left us with a bit over 5,400 patients with that. The ethnic breakdown you see, 62% Latino, 16% African American, 17% Caucasian. Most of our diabetics are either uninsured or on Medicare or Medicaid. So again, our intervention arms, just to review again the methodology, and I would say this is one shortcoming of our study, and so I'm going to go over it again because it's kind of confusing and a little bit complex. So on the one hand, we had a randomization at the patient level for the patient report card mailings, in which half of the patients received these quarterly mailings over a year, and the other half did not receive the mailings. The second part of the randomization was at the clinic level. So if you take the point of care patient report cards, four of our eight clinics were randomized to have this point of care distribution, and the other four were not. We further stratified by size. We have in our healthcare system, four of our eight clinics are relatively large, and four are relatively small. So that left us with two large and two small clinics that received the point of care patient report card, and two large and two small that did not. In a similar way, we randomized at the clinic level for the enhanced provider report cards. Again, two large and two small were in the intervention group for this, and two large and two small were not. So as you looked at the clinic randomization for these two different interventions, you had four groupings. Each group had a small and a large clinic. So one of the groups had neither of the two interventions. One of the group had the point of care patient report card distribution. A third group had just the enhanced provider report cards, and the fourth group had both of the interventions. So what were our findings? First of all, turning to the qualitative analysis, and I think in the end, we found the qualitative analysis the most useful as far as interpreting our intervention. And we obtained this analysis in a couple of ways. One was through one-on-one interviews with the diabetes champion at each of our eight clinics, tape-reported interview. And the other way was through surveys that were mailed to our patients with their report cards. So it was mailed twice over the year to the entire 2,700 or so patients receiving the mailed report cards. And the survey addressed self-efficacy, patient satisfaction based on Likert scores, as well as had space for open-ended comments from patients. And two themes that came out of this was that, one, both patients and providers generally embraced the patient report card. Patients felt that it was a useful tool, that it motivated them to manage their diabetes and help them pick out goals. Providers also, by and large, felt the patient report cards were very useful also, and that it served as a point of discussion in their visits with patients and helped them come up with a plan for patients. Another theme that came out, whether providers were at a clinic with the intervention or not, was general frustration with just the way we manage diabetes, our traditional disease management strategy, in which the diabetic patient, if we're lucky, they'll come in once every 3 months, maybe every 6 months, maybe every 9 months. And there's so many competing issues on the table as they have 15 or 20 minutes to work with the patient. We're also working with other issues like chronic pain, healthcare maintenance, acute issues that are often bringing the patients in. So in a way, the providers feel like they don't have a lot of control often over the diabetes outcomes in their patients and cite frustration with our traditional way of managing these patients. So our quantitative analysis, first for the patient mailings, again, we were hoping to impact process outcomes, and the bottom line was we didn't. We did not impact process outcomes. We looked at this a couple different ways as far as sub-analyses. We wondered, well, what about those patients that weren't performing well? Maybe it served as a motivator to bring them into clinic, to re-engage them with healthcare. Well, that wasn't true. Or maybe it turned them off and they were discouraged by their performance. That wasn't true as well. We did not see any impact on process outcomes of the mailed report cards. Now, as we turn to the clinic-level randomization, we looked at the data a couple of different ways. And as you look at the top half of this graphic, this is looking at the randomization for point-of-care patient report cards. And in purple bar, those are clinics that where this took place, the point-of-care distribution. And in the, I guess that's the kind of bluish bar, and then the more reddish bar is the clinics, the control clinics that did not have that intervention. The bottom half of this graphic was for the enhanced provider report cards. Again, the bar on the left is for clinics where this intervention took place, and then the more reddish bar on the right is where clinics where it was just the standard provider report card. And as you look at the groupings across there, the outcome measures, A1C less than 7, LDL less than 100, blood pressure less than 130 over 80, and as you look at the vertical axis, it's the absolute percent change in baseline and the percent of patients meeting the outcome measure. So, for instance, if you had in a particular group a patient population that had 34% at goal for A1C less than 7, at the end of intervention there were 37%, that would be an absolute percent change of 3%. And, you know, the first thing you notice as you scan through this graphic is that whatever group the patient was in, there was improvement. And we found that encouraging. This is something we hadn't really looked at so much in our healthcare system, as our diabetes registry is dynamic. You always have patients kind of coming onto the registry, falling off the registry. But as we follow a fixed cohort over time, we do see improvement over time. However, somewhat discouraging is you look at the intervention on the top for the point of care patient report card distribution, you see more improvement in the clinics that did not have this. And significantly so for A1C less than 7, the start items, as well as for blood pressure less than 130 over 80. And a bit the opposite on the bottom half when you're looking at the provider performance feedback, although the only change that was significant was for hemoglobin A1C less than 7. So we'll come back to this just briefly in the discussion, but in the end, we didn't really believe the results so much. You know, we felt that we had trouble really capturing the effect of this intervention for a number of reasons. Another way we looked at the data was for the enhanced provider report cards. We compared those patients that were identified on the provider report cards. So that would be 30 providers every quarter had up to 10 patients on their report card identified. We compared those to matched controls that also met the pre-selected criteria but had not been identified on the enhanced provider performance report card. And again, the outcomes are the same as on the last graphic that you see along the horizontal axis. And then on the vertical axis, again, the absolute percent change from baseline. And you see that those identified on the provider report cards had better performance than those that were not the matched controls. However, it was only statistically significant, the start item, the A1C less than 7. And this is the final way that we looked at the data. You could imagine any given patient could have had a 0, 1, 2, or 3 of the interventions. In other words, a given patient could have received mailed report cards or not. They could have been at a clinic that had point-of-care distribution of the patient report card or not. Or they could have been identified on a provider report card or not. So on the left side, those are patients with all three interventions. The bar, purplish bar on the left, are those patients, it's before the start of the intervention, and then the bar right next to it, the red bar, is the percent at goal at the end of the intervention, and this is for A1C less than 7. And as you go across, there are different permutations of how many of the interventions they had until you reach all the way to the right, and those patients had none of the interventions. And so the bottom line is, as we looked at this patient-level analysis, there was improvement in every group over time in A1C less than 7, as well as the other measures, the LDL and the blood pressure. However, it was not statistically significant as you compared the groups to each other, as well as any group to the control group that had none of the interventions. So a couple of discussion points. One is that we found there were limitations to a randomized controlled trial of looking at disease management interventions when randomized at the clinic level. I mean, we feel like it's worth studying, but there are some real challenges to it. You know, as you look at, say, two clinics, one that had the intervention and one that didn't, it can be hard to control for things like the charisma of the diabetes champion at one clinic compared to the other, or the involvement of the staff, as well as patient population characteristics, different community resources, different ethnic breakdowns, different baseline performance. Another challenge was the concomitant QI initiatives that were taking place across our clinics. We didn't discourage these. It would have made for a more clean intervention, but we did not discourage it. And there were all kinds of interventions that were different at different clinics, some using patient navigators, some using case management strategies. There were also a number of computer changes that were rolled out to clinics at different times, such as medication reconciliation. A further challenge at randomization at the clinic level was the power analysis, and there are ways to try to increase the power, but with an N of 8, it can be rather challenging. So how do we improve process outcomes? This was very valuable to us to see that the patient mailings were not effective at doing this. It just tells us that mailing out to 2,700 patients on a quarterly basis throughout the year is not going to impact them to come into the clinic and to get labs checked more often and to re-engage them with healthcare. We can talk more about that in the discussion if anybody's interested. We are having some ongoing study of that and some ideas about it. How do we improve intermediate clinical outcomes? Well, it ties into the last point, the provider's frustration about the way that we're traditionally caring for chronic diseases like diabetes. And two themes that come out of it. One is it shouldn't just drop on the provider's lap. It works much better if it's a team-based approach. And some of the clinics with an enhanced provider report card, one of the clinics in particular, did take a more team-based approach in which a clerk, a nurse, the diabetes champion were involved in outreach to the targeted patients and tracking them over time. And there was more satisfaction at that clinic. The second theme that comes out of it is that it makes sense for a chronic disease like diabetes to make it easy for patients to interact, engage with our healthcare system outside of the traditional face-to-face visit, on a weekly or several times a week basis to check in about their blood pressures, their blood sugars, their medications. So in conclusion, we were able to successfully individualize feedback and automate it to our providers and patients by mail and at the point of care. It's not clear that these patient report cards, this brief self-management facilitation, improved outcomes, but they were certainly very well received by the patients and the providers, and we took a little more stock in the qualitative analysis, and at this point, those have been rolled out to all 8 of our clinics and is an ongoing process of care. Targeted patient-level provider feedback, a little hard, again, to interpret the results, maybe an impact on glycemic control, but in the end, some of the provider frustration that we learn more and more about during our interviews just points to the need for novel ways of taking care of diabetes and other chronic diseases. And I'd just like to thank AHRQ for funding this intervention as well as the other members of the team. And we could open up to questions at this point.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, all three of you, for outstanding presentations. Really appreciate the thoughtful and insightful work that you've done, and your very timely presentations of it. Everybody kept themselves 20 minutes, so bravo. The slide that you're seeing now is to remind me that there is a feedback that will pop up in a few minutes. We really genuinely are interested for our audience in knowing what you thought of everything about the conference and how we can serve you better. So please take a moment to fill out the survey. We really do listen to them, and we try to make changes based on your feedback. So thank you very much. So moving down to the next slide, let's go to questions and answers. So I have a couple that I've got teed up, and there's some that have come in through the question line. I will remind you that you use the question tab if you've got questions for our presenters. I will first ask our presenters if they have any questions for each other based on what you heard from the different presentations.
This is Jenny. John, I had a question for Karen.
Okay, go for it.
I just wondered, where can you get a hold of the value sets that include the code list that you referenced, Karen?
Yeah, probably shortly after the final rule for MU is available, we will put information on our website. We just didn't want to put anything before everyone knows where that is going. But whether our measures are in there or not, we'll put that information on our website shortly after the rule is released.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I had.
Good question. Karen or Henry, any questions?
Not right now, John.
Okay. Oh, Henry, did you have one?
No, I'll just open it up to the general audience.
Okay. So I have a few, like I said, that are teed up here. I'll read them out to you. For Denny, there was a question about the productivity of your employed positions. Has the productivity of the employed positions increased or decreased? And if so, do you know by how much? Thanks.
I don't know whether that question is referring to productivity with the use of the EHR in a paperless environment or with the quality measures. So I'll address those a little bit. With the use of the EHR, we did see, and that was actually studied in a previous ARC grant, we did see a dip in productivity. It varied by provider as we implemented, but we saw improved productivity after a few months of the implementation of the EHR system and going paperless. With regard to the quality measures reporting, we didn't see any. We didn't study that, but just from looking at the data, we didn't see any decline from asking them to code quality measures in the context of the visit. They didn't do it that well either. I'm not saying that if they had done it well, it would have impacted their productivity or not. We didn't see any, just looking at the numbers.
Okay. The question had embedded it after productivity. It said number of patient visits in the office, but again, you know, not specific between the paperless versus the quality measure. So
right, and so no, yeah, same answer.
Okay. And Denny, folks want to know who your vendor is.
Our vendor for our EHR, ambulatory EHR, is LSS Data Systems, which is the partner vendor with Meditech for the acute side, so LSS Data Systems. And the vendor for that did the distribution of the quality measures is Zinx Health.
Okay. And on a related note, Karen, you got – oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. That was the Denny question. Okay, so we got that. Good. So question for Karen. How are active patients defined in the EHR?
Good question. I'm trying to remember. There was a boy, that's a great question. We talked long about that. I believe if they had visits within the time frame that were indicated for our data collection protocol. So during a certain time period, if there were two visits, then that patient was active.
Gotcha. Okay. I actually wanted to make a side note, Karen, about your presentation. You mentioned HQMF, and as you know, Karen, but folks on the phone don't necessarily know, ARC also supports work in clinical decision support, which, you know, folks can probably understand is related to quality measurement. It's the front end of quality measurement, whereas quality measurement's, you know, after the fact. And in the work that we've supported, we've become very interested in seeing how we align codification of clinical decision support and clinical recommendations that eventually lead to quality measures. In terms of HQMF, the vendors have said pretty clearly to us, we really don't want to code everything in different ways. Can you try to link these together? So HQMF is an important concept and an important format that we think as it evolves is going to streamline our path to making all this work well together. So for Henry, I have a question. Given the body of literature indicating that reminder letters are an effective way of getting patients back in for services such as immunizations, why do you think this technique didn't prove effective in this instance?
You know, we're honestly not sure. We were a bit surprised by it, especially that it was not a generic letter that we sent out, that it was a customized, individualized letter that was sent out. And we're honestly not sure. Other things that we're exploring right now are using other modalities for reaching out to patients. Even in our safety net population, there's pretty high cell phone usage, usage of text messages, and we're lucky enough to have some funding from AHRQ to explore this more using other modalities of reaching out to patients to try to re-engage them with the healthcare system.
Very good. Henry, actually, you also had a question about the population that you're working with. The asker wanted to know, how does the diabetic patient population compare to the overall population in the Denver area? In particular, in terms of percentage of Latino population, and was curious to know also if you had any insight as to why Latinos have such a high diabetes rate in the folks that you work with.
Those are good questions. It's a pretty similar breakdown in certain ways, our diabetic population compared to the other, the rest of our safety net population. A pretty similar breakdown as far as the demographics, the ethnicity. I can't quote you the exact numbers, but not drastically different. And why Latinos have higher rates of diabetes compared to other communities, not sure either. You know, we've explored this a little bit as we've seen other things arise based on ethnicity and diabetes and other outcomes, and it's hard to explain. For instance, our African-American population has a higher rate of hypertension, even when you control for a lot of other factors, including medication use, prescription patterns from providers. And I think there are unanswered questions as to why this is.
Okay, very good. I'm not sure who this is for, but it may be, well, I'll just throw it out there. Were there any measures used based off national benchmarks like NCQA diabetes programs, or did you create your own measures? Anybody want to take a hack at that?
This is Denny. We did not create any of our own measures. We used, all of our measures were measures that were part of the PQRI program.
And Karen, I think I know where your measures came from. Henry, how about your measures?
Our measures were fairly focused on the ABCs and just based on expert recommended guidelines from the American Diabetes Association.
Okay, so you had a base that came from clinical recommendations from folks like the ADA?
That's correct, expert panel recommendations.
Gotcha, okay. So a question for Karen Kometic. One of your categories of exceptions are, quote, system exceptions, unquote. Can you provide some examples of these, and did these exclude the patient from the measure, or were they used to provide feedback to the provider?
Great question. So right now we think of system reasons as something like there is a shortage of flu vaccine, so I don't have the flu vaccine to give. Or there is a piece of equipment that we don't have in this office for a particular test. And I will say that just like our work on exploring the medical reasons, we are trying to figure out what are more granular ways to represent those system reasons so there is not confusion, because I mean, of course, the word system can mean a lot of things to different people. And then what happens is that, you know, again, if the patient meets the numerator, the patient's in the numerator. If they don't meet the numerator and they have a valid system reason, they are removed from the denominator for calculating performance, but they would be reported out in the exception rate calculation. So again, data are not lost, but it's reported as an exception rate calculation, and you can report those rates by medical, by patient, by system reason.
Very good. So I think I got a quick question shot to you. Please clarify the definition of the term granularity in context. Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think that's me. I watch my words. What I mean is the words medical, patient, and system are pretty broad. And so we would like to identify subcategories for each of those. And that's what I mean by being more granular, more specific, more subcategories, so that in time, when everybody's using an EHR and we're all able to export data on quality measures, we would know a little more than medical. We would know, for example, allergy, clinical contraindication, intolerance, interaction. That's what I meant by being more granular.
Very good. And that's just to be fair to you, that's a term that a lot of different folks use, and I think it's good to provide some granularity about the term. So some precision. So we actually had two questions that are sort of related. One is, will the recorded presentation be available on your website to hear it at a later time? And the other question was, will you make the slides available after the presentation? The answer to both of those is yes. It takes a little while to get the slides available. But, and Colin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that these will be available in the near future at healthit.arc.gov. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
Excellent. So we would not let such wisdom go uncaptured for posterity. So, so I don't have any more questions in the queue, but I would like to spend our last couple minutes here teeing up some thoughts from you about where we go from here. So this is an excellent discussion of how you actually kind of get into the nuts and bolts of these things. You know, we're coming up on a time here of increased national expectations of usage of these things. And so how do you think it's going to go? And I will start with Denny. How do you think it's going to go?
Well, I think obviously from our study, we think it makes sense to do quality measurement and reporting, sort of extracted. Institute for Health Metrics was our partner that did the extraction, and Dr. Anita Karts was really active in making this happen for us. And I think that method and that methodology has proven, we proved it to ourselves and to whoever wants to read our study, that it is more efficient and more accurate. We're a little ways from having measures that Karen's going to help us develop to be able to do that in a standard way, but we're excited about the possibility, and I really feel like that's going to move a lot faster now that meaningful use is out there sort of as an incentive for us to do that.
Okay. Good answer. Karen, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it calls for more webinars, John. I'll just say that I think this is a tremendous opportunity before all of us in this country, and we're all going to go into it, and it's going to get better every year. And the best thing I think that can happen is we all keep talking and sharing. I mean, obviously, ONC has established the regional extension centers, the beacon communities. ARC has its practice-based research networks. I mean, somehow we just need to continue to have these forums, I think, where users can just hear from each other. You know, oh, that's how they built it in, in Denny's location. That's how Henry's group did it. I mean, I think it needs to be a lot of sharing in the next few years.
And we are grateful that smart folks like you all are willing to do that sharing, so thank you. Henry, how do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, I agree as well with Karen and Denny that study of different uses of our health information technology, of outcome measures, of our diabetes registry, and seeing what works and what doesn't. What we're excited about is our ability to track patients through our diabetes registry, to see patients that are overdue for labs, patients that are late for medication refills, and finding ways to kind of reach out to these patients between visits and see what's going on, see what the barriers are, see if there's depression, and just making it easier and easier for patients to engage with us outside of these face-to-face visits where it's hard to make appointments, it takes waiting in line, a lot of planning ahead of time, ways that are easy for patients to engage just through the telephone, through text messaging, through email, et cetera.
Okay, good stuff. So we got two quick questions. questions that I think we'll be able to finish off with. The first one, Denny, would you repeat the name of your EHR vendor?
LSS Data Systems.
Okay, very good, thank you. And then finally, and this is all of you can relate your experiences if you wouldn't mind. After an EHR vendor closes a sale, how receptive are they to working with buyers to tweak the software to make it easier to do quality reporting and analysis?
This is Denny. I would have to say our vendor, LSS Data Systems, since I can't seem to say that clearly, has been fabulous. I don't have experience with others, but we've had great experience. They're very interested in helping us do it, do quality measurement and reporting.
Very good. Karen, how about the folks you've worked with?
Yeah, I would say for the project I described, it was mostly work of the practice sites that had to consult with their vendor but actually do the adding of the fields. But keep in mind, that project was pre-ARA, and I think you'll probably begin to see more experiences like Denny had.
Henry?
If that's an area I haven't had much experience with, honestly.
Okay. All right, and that's fair. You know, if I had to guess, I would probably say that for quality reporting and analysis that's required to be able to achieve meaningful use, vendors will be falling over themselves to make sure that the folks that they sell to will be able to do it well, because it wouldn't surprise me if that was some sort of condition of the term of sale. For other quality reporting analysis, I think it might potentially be variable. I think there are going to be some folks, like the folks that Denny have worked with, that are excited and engaged, and some folks where it's more challenging. Just a guess. I don't know anything specific. So, all right. So the last question that came in, what was the reporting engine used to extract the data? And I'm not sure who that's to, but...
That may be me, that Denny, because I use that extraction term all the time. Institute for Health Metrics is a service that does that, and they extract it out of the proprietary database directly from our system, and they only work with hospitals who have the Meditech software and the LSS data software. But Institute for Health Metrics.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. So with that, I think we will close. I want to thank immensely our three guests, Dane McCollum, Karen Kometic, Henry Fisher. This is a wonderful webinar. Karen, I promise you we will make more opportunities available. We have the program at ARC, and we also work with ONC on the Health IT Research Center. So we will look to see if we can make other opportunities available through that as well. So thank you all so much for your time and for the hundreds of people who dialed in. Colin, would you like to tee up the next event?
Yes, thank you very much, John, and thank you for the great job that you and all of our presenters did today, and thank you all for attending. Watch your email and for notice about the next event, which is going to be a webinar examining health information technology and safety. That should be coming up in the very near future, and as John did say earlier, the recording of today's event and the handout will soon be available on the AHRQ National Resource Center website within the next week. Just go to http://healthit.ahrq.gov. This event was brought to you by the AHRQ National Resource Center for Health IT. Again, we want to thank you for attending. Have a great day. This does conclude the event. Take care.